tardi, ciao amici. Morning, morning, honorable members. Good morning, the leadership of the university, Cape Peninsula University of Technology, and the student representatives. Dr. Carol Lisson from NSFAS, the administrator, together with your team. All of you, ladies and gentlemen and guests, you are welcome to this meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, Science and Innovation. So we were supposed to be meeting three institutions today. But there's been some developments which I'm going to brief the members. But first, let me go through the apologies. Two apologies that we've received, I think it's three. Apology from the minister, Minister Nzimande, who will not be able to attend the meeting today because following the announcement by the president regarding the coronavirus, the minister is convening meetings of different stakeholders in the post-school sector which are taking place in Pretoria. There's also apology from the deputy minister, who is scheduled for a doctor's appointment later today at what is today? 17th. Yeah, later today at 2 in Johannesburg. There's also apology from Honorable Yabo. And the Honorable Mkachwa will be coming a little bit late. So those are the apologies that we have received. Now, there was an announcement on Sunday. There was an address to the nation by the President, His Excellency Ramaphosa, addressing the nation around this epidemic of coronavirus, COVID-19. Now, the president announced some restrictions on traveling and other measures that government has put in place to curb the spread of coronavirus. And some of those measures have affected the parliamentary program. We were supposed to be having a sitting this afternoon. That sitting has been called off. Tomorrow there is not going to be a committee meeting. We're starting the plenary at 10 o'clock in the morning. And so as a result, the colloquium that we have planned for tomorrow on skills, we had to call it off, so it has been cancelled. So there's no colloquium taking place tomorrow as planned. But it had also affected some of the guests who were supposed to join us. Now, we had invited Sefako Makgato University. We had also invited the University of Fort Hare. We had invited the UniZulu. So with regard to UniZulu, I got a letter from the minister last week. Minister requesting that We give him some space to conclude the discussions that he has initiated with both management, student leadership, and the other stakeholders, and the minister was indicating that the negotiations are at an advanced stage, but also at a very sensitive stage. So he was afraid that if we engage with them, the parties might go back to their original position, for which he thought that there's been some movement and they are just about to finalize the matters. So we then agreed that we can then give the minister space to finalize those discussions. And hence, CPUT was originally not part of our plan, but we had to schedule because of some developments there which took place last week, including the call by the students who came to visit us here in Parliament. Unfortunately, I was not around, so the whip of the committee had to receive that memorandum together with the House Chairperson, Honorable Ntombela. So we thought that given the fact that that was still fresh and something that was concerning to us, so we need to extend an invitation. And we're happy that the university is here today. So we sort of replaced UniZulu with the CPUT. Now, Sefako Makgato University, we had extended an invitation to them, the Vice Chancellor was traveling to the UK. He only landed back in the country on Sunday morning. So initially he was advised that he may probably need to put himself in isolation for a day or two, and then after which he can be able to move. But then later in the evening that Sunday, after the President announced that even UK is one of the countries for which is put in the list of countries for restrictions and all of that, and all those who are coming back from those countries have then had to go through that isolation for 14 days. So it then affected him, the acting Vice Chancellor. So it meant that he was not going to be part of the delegation today. But also what made matters worse was the fact that the council was also not invited. So we picked it up on Sunday. So the secretariat here, when they issued the invitation, they forgot to invite the chairperson of council. So we had to communicate with them on Sunday, but by that time it was late, because if council were to make a presentation, it meant that they were to meet and agree on their presentation and all of that. So it was a late notice, which is a mistake from here in Parliament. So the secretariat here did acknowledge that it was an error on their part not to invite the council, because most of the issues that are confronting that university are at the level of governance. So we then accepted the request from their side not to schedule them, because both the Vice Chancellor and the Chairperson of Council were not going to attend. So we agree that we must give them some time to for council to meet and work on their presentation, and then we'll schedule them when we come back. So that is that with SMU. And then Fort Hare. Management had confirmed that they will be coming, the Vice Chancellor and everybody. Yesterday we got a call from the Vice Chancellor who said that they have received a directive from the department, from the DDG Parker, to say that they must not travel to come to Parliament. So I was taken aback, because normally if the department wants to intervene, they will start by talking to us. So we didn't get anything. Hence, we tried to get hold of the minister. The minister was in a press briefing. As you know, that government was briefing the nation yesterday. So later on, when they finished there, when he tried to get back to me, I was also engaged, so I couldn't take the call, so we missed each other. Because we wanted to find out what happened, why is the department now cancelling people who are supposed to come in and make presentations here. And from the guidelines, from what was issued by the government yesterday, it was clear that Parliament must continue to do its work, and the committees of Parliament, as the Speaker pronounced, were supposed to sit and process the matters before them. So I didn't understand, why are you cancelling Fort Hare and not CPUT? So quite clearly, there's been that. So unfortunately, Dr. Diane Parker cancelled Fort Hare to come here. There was never even a courtesy to ourselves to say, this is what I've said, I've done. So that is the situation that we are sitting with Fort Hare. But I must say, management was willing to come to present. They've sent us a copy of their presentation. So they are not coming. But then what also disturbed me was the fact that management then cancelled the flight tickets of the SRC without talking to them. The SRC leadership, when they arrived at the airport, they discovered that their flight arrangements has been cancelled. Nobody spoke to them. And they had to call, and we said to them, this is the situation. Unfortunately, we can't meet with them in the absence of the management of the university. But it clearly shows that there still continues to be a problem of dialogue, working together, communication at the university. If management can cancel the flight tickets without talking to the students, then the problems are perpetuating there. But there is a letter that we have distributed. I'm sure members have got a letter from the administrator, who basically is giving us a middle finger, saying that he can't come here. He doesn't think that it's necessary for him to come. So we have distributed that letter, because it's quite mind-boggling to get this kind of missive from somebody that you think understands how the sector that is operating with works. Professor Loiso Nonga. Professor. who's the administrator of the University of Fort Hare, who has just written us a lot of rubbish, to put it, to characterize it properly. So those are the issues, honorable members. So we now have CPUT, and the two other universities are not here. I think SMU, we agreed with them. We wrote them a letter to confirm that we agree that they shouldn't come because of the circumstances, some of which, most of which is not of their own doing. Fort Hare was supposed to come. They were cancelled by Diane Parker. But the administrator was in any case not going to be here. UniZulu will meet with them sometime next week. We had to switch them as per the request of the minister. So that's where we are, honorable members. I don't know whether I would want to reflect now, briefly, particularly on Fort Hare, and then develop the way forward, and then ask that we should be briefed by the leadership of CPUT. The sense I get, particularly from Fort Hare, is that we are sitting with a problem, big problem, which we need to confront. I think we would have to do some extraordinary things to make sure that we put sense into those who are in charge of that university, because it's quite clear that we've got a big problem. Okay, I'm just going to take, please just be briefed, honorable members, make a comment and a suggested way forward. We'll wrap this one up, maybe for 30 minutes, have this discussion, so that we don't have to waste time for those guests who have honored our invitation. I'm going to take hands. I saw Honorable Nodada. So it's Honorable Nodada only who's interested in. Okay, Honorable Litsie and Mkacho. And we are done. We don't take hands from this side. I'm sorry, my comrade, I don't know your name there. I saw your hand. You'll have to go through the elections, get elected, and come and sit on this side of the house. Okay, Honorable. Alright, we'll just come like that and then conclude with Honorable Mkacho.
Alright, thanks, Chair. Good morning to everybody. Chair, I think it's just three quick points. The first one is, can I just please request, and I understand that why we had to postpone the skills colloquium, but I would put it to your table that let's rather postpone rather than cancel the colloquium, because I think there's a massive need for us to discuss the role of higher education in terms of our skills development that is relevant for the market, entrepreneurship, innovation, and industry. So I think it's something that we need to consider, even beyond the coronavirus. Secondly, it's a concern that the leadership of the ministry is not here consistently now, Chair, because some of the comments that we're going to make about the University of Fort Hare, I think, directly fall in their ambit. It's understandable that the sector is massively busy, but by virtue of it consistently happening, I mean, it's been months on end now, that the leadership of the ministry is not here. They're the political principals. They're the one that gives political leadership to the particular department. And I think we can mitigate a lot of things that happen in between if we have direct engagement with them. So I think it's a concern that needs to be noted. But lastly, Chair, we accept the SMU and UniZulu's explanation of not coming here. But I think I sound like a broken record now when it comes to Fort Hare. I also had an altercation or an interaction with the current administrator of Fort Hare, who seemingly interprets the rules of Parliament that gives us a responsibility to play individual and collective oversight of these institutions completely wrong. And having read that letter, it just shows the sign of arrogance that the administrator there has. They have got a detached role of what's happening at Fort Hare. You can't simply say that by virtue of you being an administrator dealing with council matters, you have no responsibility when it comes to administrative matters in the university. So it's that type of arrogance that I think we need to be able to deal with. That administrator was appointed by the minister, right? And there needs to be a very urgent review of the role that they've played in that institution and whether or not we can't recommend a decision of maybe changing that particular administrator, because they're completely out of touch with what is happening on the ground there, and they completely interpret the laws of this particular house completely wrong. And lastly, I do think there's a crisis at the University of Fort Hare. And the more we, like, you know, paint this thing as if, no, it's something that we can resolve by a meeting here and whatever the case may be, then everything is going to go well, it clearly is not going to help. There needs to be a direct political intervention by the minister or the deputy minister at the University of Fort Hare, like they are doing with UniZulu. And I think that's how we're going to mitigate some of those challenges at Fort Hare. Because I also received a call from the SRC yesterday saying that with the airport, our flights are cancelled. Clearly, there's a breakdown in communication. There's no respect, you know, in terms of the roles in representing students in that particular institution. And you've got an administrator that is so detached from what is happening there. And we can't sit here and continuously talk about the same thing. And I think we must make a recommendation that says the minister must be briefed about the actions of the minister. I mean, read this letter. It's nonsense, to be honest. It's nonsense. I mean, some of us are qualified and we understand, we can interpret the law. It's nonsense, to be honest with you. And we need to be able to compel the minister to make a decision on whether the administrator must continue doing their work if they're going to have a detached role, and what interventions they can directly go to Fort Hare and make for it to start working. Otherwise, at the moment, it's not, Chair, and I think I'll leave it there. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. Honorable Keith.
I'm covered, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable...
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. No, I'm also covered. I'm okay after that input.
Not that I... you are representing other parties now.
Chairperson, we don't want to repeat ourselves.
Okay. No, that was on a lighter note. Honorable, let's see.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe let me start with Fort Hare. I think Tate Loiso, the administrator there, he wrote us a very long piece of paper here, quoting the law, when they've just lost a case themselves in the court of evicting students. Clearly somebody who needs lecturing on the law is himself, and I think it will not be right of us not to remind him that for somebody who claims to know so much about the law, he has just recently lost a case there. I think including the tone of the letter, so much arrogance, informing us that his term of office is coming to an end. He wants to concentrate on those things when the university there is literally in flames. I don't know what office is he talking about, because clearly they are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And if they were doing what they were supposed to be doing, they will not will not have invited them to come here for the third time now in 3 months, literally. So maybe we must remind them about about doing their job. And on UniZulu, Chair, I think I accept the intervention by the ministry. But for us to invite those people, it's because we felt that they are not, the ministry and the university there have not been doing what they are supposed to be doing. And I'm on the fence with either accepting or not accepting the reasons provided by the minister in intervening at that institution. We had a discussion, I think, in the presence of the minister on the 27th of November last year, when we told him that initially we had requested from the university branch of the department, we had requested a thorough report on what is happening across universities and universities of technologies across. And they promised to send us a report. In fact, he committed himself on that day when Max building. So as much as I want to agree or admit or take their reasons for intervening for our postponement there on their intervention, I think I'm on the fence because they had ample time to at least give us a thorough briefing on what are they doing university by university. So on UniZulu, I'm on the fence. And on Sfako Makhato, I think it's only fair, given the situation in the country and the world with those who've been traveling across, visiting other countries, that maybe we give them space. But I think when we eventually meet them, maybe you can give us a window for members to send questions to them, for them to include in their presentation. Because I personally don't think the only problems at that institution are management. I think the council there have not been doing well in their oversight over management, and that's why we have so many problems. Yes, majority of them emanates from the management side, but council itself, I think we want to pose questions to them. Maybe if we can just give us a window for all members to send questions directly to them on what has been happening in those institutions, in that institution particularly. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Mkhatshwa.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning to everyone in the room. Chair, perhaps I should begin by saying that I think during this time of how different institutions are responding to corona or the coronavirus, it's important that we as a portfolio committee just play some sort of aerial oversight assisted by our research and content advisors to make sure that they aren't, certain institutions within the sector have proven to be to take total disregard of student leadership and student engagement, and during a time like this they may further position themselves with that particular arrogance. So I think it's very important that we make sure that we have some sort of oversight of how different institutions are responding to the coronavirus and whether or not they are amicable in the way in which they address the issue. And then I'd like to say that I feel like the autonomy of the portfolio committee is being hindered with, in the sense that taking into consideration what the minister says he's doing and the interventions that he's putting through at the University of Zululand, I think that I'm questioning how we are able to fulfill our role as a portfolio committee in regard with what he has said he's trying to achieve at this particular time. And how are we certain of the fact that the interventions being made are interventions that will truly lead to an amicable resolve between students and the university and the issues in general in that particular space? So perhaps if he can give more detail to the portfolio committee through you, Chair, of what exactly are the interventions of the department when it comes to the University of Zululand, in order for us to be certain of the fact that there are interventions that will ultimately lead to those issues being resolved. And then I'd like to strongly raise my concerns with particular officials of the department who continuously undermine, again, the autonomy of the portfolio committee. Chair, it was not so long ago when some of us went to myself went to the University of Venda. When we tried to assist when we tried to understand as members what exactly is happening with the issues that SAWS had raised and why the shutdown was not being ended when the minister had responded to their memorandum, right? So we tried to understand why that is happening, and we were questioned in what capacity are we trying to intervene on this particular matter as members of the portfolio committee. Again, it's the same official who we are told has played a role in informing the University of Fort Hare not to come to this portfolio committee without consulting with the portfolio committee chair. They have not been invited by the department. They were invited by yourself, Chair, and ourselves through this portfolio committee. So I really don't understand how an official is able to send or communicate with the university management with regards to a cancellation without consulting. I don't even understand at all. I don't know what, I can't say it in English, but in Xhosa it really covers me. So I really think, Chair, that we need to have a very stern conversation as the portfolio committee with the department on understanding the remit of our work to ensure that the various responsibilities that we have to play are not undermined. So that's one of my greatest concerns. I think I've been covered with regards to the continuous disregard of the SRC and the student leadership at Fort Hare, and actually a posturing that seems to not want to resolve these issues. And then I think with the SMU, I've been covered. But perhaps, Chair, I don't know if you covered this. I might not have heard you. If there are burning issues that we would like to sort of have an understanding of, I mean, we won't be able to necessarily determine when, conditions might change with regards to coronavirus, but our work can continue. And I think as a portfolio committee that is higher education science and innovation, science and technology, we should try to find ways of continuing to do our work using technology. So I think that's perhaps it, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. I think Diane Parker owes this committee an explanation. And I think we must request that explanation from her on why she cancelled the University of Fort Hare from coming to the meeting today without talking to us. She had no business communicating with them about the attendance of this meeting, whether they should come or should not come, because that invitation was never issued by the department. I guess that's the view that I'm getting from the committee. So we will formally request that from the Director General and particularly from Dr. Diane Parker, She must give us explanation in the next 7 days why she did that. Because it's completely, completely out of order for her to have done that. And you see, the other worrying thing is that we have agreed with the department that every time we call the universities, they must be here. Now, there is no official from the university branch, as far as I can see, in the house today. So there's not even, she's even absent. Remember last week she was here. Now today she's not here. She's stopping people from coming to talk to us, to have an engagement with us, and they just don't even send a delegation. I think I'm going to have a problem with that attitude, because the attitude is something that we are not going to tolerate. So we will do that. We'll ask her to give us an explanation in the next 7 days what she did. On the issue of Lois or the administrator, the Lois or Monk. Well, he has written a letter to us, and I think we must respond to his letter with the contempt that it deserves, because this letter is very contemptuous. It's undermining us. It's basically giving us the middle finger. I don't understand how a person can be at a high level of an institution of higher learning if he has got this kind of attitude. Universities are public spaces. If you don't want to interact at that level, you must sit at home. Open a business, open your own thing there, do your own thing. Because you get appointed as an administrator. The administrator is a council. You have assumed all the roles of council. There is a reason why Fort has been put under administration. You come in there, you administrator, and then you take a hands-off approach. You say, no, this is management. When the university is shut down, you said, no, this has got nothing to do with me. Why are you there in the first place? Because council plays an oversight. The university is led by council, basically. That's how it is. And then we have got a man who does not understand his responsibility. And we call him to come here. He says, no, I'm not going to come because I've got this and that. I think we will then respond to him, but I think we'll have to engage with the minister about the continued presence of this man in that institution, because he's not helping at all. He's talking about asthma. Maybe he must go and sit at home and nurse his asthma, because he can't fly to come here because of asthma. What nonsense is that? I mean, we're being undermined here, and I don't think it's something that we must accept. So we will not allow, anybody to undermine Parliament. So the preeminence role of this institution must be respected. If anybody wants us to undermine him, he wants to undermine us, he must know that we're also going to undermine that person, no matter the station that person occupies. So I think that's how we're concluding the matter, honorable members. I see the smile, so the smile is kilakaleo. Okay. All right, so let's get on the presentation from CPUT. We are sorry that you had to engage with other issues in your presence, but we are a public institution, so all our meetings are public. Everything about us is public, so we can't go into committee and discuss our own issues. But anyway, Sorry for taking some time for you. As you present, probably please introduce the delegation of management. I don't know, the council is represented here. So management and council. And when the student leadership come, they will also do the same. Introduce the SRC leadership that is here.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start first by introducing myself. I'm Chris Ntlapo. I'm the Vice Chancellor and Principal of Cape Peninsula University of Technology. And I would like my colleagues to introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Prem Kupu, the Dean of Student Affairs.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Garth van Ginsen, and I'm the Director for Marketing and Communications.
Good morning. The name is Rishi Balkaran. I'm the Deputy Vice Chancellor for Teaching and Learning.
Good morning. I'm Peter Duplessis. I'm the Executive Director of Finance.
Good morning. I'm Malit Mol. I'm the Acting Dean of Engineering in the Built Environment.
Good morning, everyone. My name is David Powell. I'm the Deputy Vice Chancellor for Research, Technology, Innovation and Partnerships.
Good morning, Marshall Sheldon. I'm substantially the Dean for Engineering and the Built Environment at CPUT in the process of handing over to the new DVC.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lomogwena, the Registrar.
Good morning, everyone. Tulani Ngunza, Deputy Dean of Students.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Kilingwe Mayende. I am the Deputy Vice Chancellor, Operations.
Good morning. My name is Ntabiseng Khawe, the Manager of Financial Aid.
Thank you, Chairperson and the Honorable House.
So you don't have anybody from Council?
I don't know, Chair, if it was invited, because...
Okay.
Yes.
Probably the same error that the Secretariat made with SMU because they didn't invite the council there, even on your side. But it's fine. Let's proceed. I think most of the issues are at the level of management. If we want to involve council, I think we will then take it from there.
As the chair pleases. Chairperson, I will start right from the beginning. I've introduced myself. I was given a scope to focus on the four focus areas. That is the registration and enrollment, the teaching and learning as a second focus area or area of focus. And I was also asked to talk about the process of disbursement of allowance to NSFAS qualifying students and briefly talk about the NSFAS status and also talk about NSFAS intervention and of course our report on the protest incidents and mitigation strategies. Chairperson, before going in, I was here, and me and my team, we can assure you, we are just a few kilometers from here. At any time, if there is something that needs clarity, we are a public institution, we are willing to come and actually explain, because there are a number of issues that are at times distorted in the media. I think we can actually give contextual specificities of some of the items. I was here in 2017 to come and actually give, I was acting at the time, and I dealt with a number of issues, and some of the issues that were vexing us, we can see they seem to be coming back again. These issues got nothing to do with either clamping down on legitimate and constitutionally enshrined student protests, but got everything to do with greed, corruption, and entrepreneurship. And of course, we're seeing these times coming up with a different element of what is called student, professional students, as well as a phenomenon that we thought we were actually behind in terms of some forces that we thought we have dealt with because of the corrupt tendencies aggregating outside the institution for their own ends. But I will elaborate later on that particular chairperson. The first focus area or areas of focus was on the whole aspect of the registration. As far as registration is concerned, chairperson, one can actually safely say that we are at about 91% of our enrollment target. This must be read with a view of saying there are still registration that is going to take place, particularly around postgraduate, as well as other areas where the target has not been met. And then the other aspect that one can flag in this focus area that I was actually asked to speak to is the CPU target versus actual. And if I were to read that number appropriately, you can see we are standing at 91.51 of the target. So we are well on our way, despite the challenges that we have had with regard to recalculation and, of course, the transition that we're actually having to the new AQFF-aligned qualification that affected University of Technology more than the traditional universities. If you look at that enrollment plan, particularly around postgraduate, you can see the numbers there as well, that as an institution, we seem to be on the right path, particularly when it comes to the number of postgraduate students in the six faculties. With your permission, Chairperson of Higher Education, Science and Technology, allow me to briefly talk about the second aspect of registration of the first entering student, because there is a very interesting aspect here. In the past, we used to struggle a lot in terms of the first time entering students. These numbers were very elusive. It was very difficult for us to meet them. But you can see when you look at the numbers there that almost all the faculties, they have actually met and exceeded that particular target. These are students on a full load that I think as an institution and of course as faculties, they have marketed themselves well. Because for sustainability of the institution, particularly as it relates to subsidy, it's very important that the number of first-time entering students who are on full load, that target is actually met. I will actually move quickly because I've commented about the postgraduate community. The second area of focus was an area on teaching and learning that I was requested to comment. That slide is giving us a picture of what we have actually done as an institution, particularly given the mayhem and upheaval that we have had in the recent past. And when you look at it there, you will find that we did actually workshop the plans and develop these plans together with faculties to look at the impact of this disruption. And one can safely say that teaching and learning, assessment, postgraduate supervision, practical laboratory work, and work integrated learning activities will go ahead in accordance with the faculties and departmental priorities. In a nutshell, when we're sitting down, we found that there are actually 9 days that were actually lost in the process. That's why we decided to bring forth the recess, and of course there was no need for us to massage the institutional calendar or make amendment to institutional calendar. So we are actually on schedule, and yesterday we sat at Senex to look at the graduation list. The numbers are promising and they look very good in terms of the core business of the institution. Though due to the coronavirus, we decided to also postpone our graduation ceremony. Then, of course, there was a focus area that I was requested to reflect on. I'm mindful of a number of aspects as far as this focus area is concerned around National Student Financial Aid Scheme, or NSFAS, as we call it. And I took some time to go through the MOA. And in MOA, what was instructional for me, and my colleagues who are dealing with this on day-to-day basis will comment, there were sections that were very telling. And the first section was a section on section 7.3 and section 7.4. There was also a very interesting section, section 13, that deals with right to inspection and right to audit, because our books are open, and if there is a dispute, particularly given the fact that I think I've seen in media people talking about the 32 million that is missing, which is actually very strange, and it's really mendacious, so to speak. Because according to our agreement with NSFAS, there is that particular section that you'll write to inspect, auditors can actually be appointed, can actually look at the books, and of course, and check if there is something of that nature. There is also a section 15 that talk about publicity that we also look at, that is very, very important, that we must actually focus on, that we actually dismayed by looking at statements made on media, even though those statements are not factual and they have a potential of damaging brand security. And the last section is the section 19 that deals with the question of dispute, that if there is a dispute, particularly in the interest of students, those disputes can be tackled between us and NSFAS. And so far, no dispute has been lodged between the two parties, because all that we're saying, we're doing everything in the interest of students. And our engagement as well, we engage with utmost good faith. We normally talk about engaging very much fidei. Chairperson, when you look at the sheer numbers, as of the 31st of January, 126.8 million was actually given to us. 28 February, 29.1 million, and that total brings to about 155.9 million. And that process that I'm articulating there is a process that is part and parcel of how the disbursement process is actually happening. I've actually named them 1, 2, 3. We receive NSFAS funded report provided by NSFAS, or we download it from the portal, and of course we prepare registration template and we request NESFOS to validate the registration template and, of course, receive remittance, disbursement from NESFOS, etc. So goes the process. The second aspect on the status of NESFOS is the whole question of the number of approved NESFOS students as of 10 March. There we can actually see that 10,008 students have been paid their allowances with a total of about 80.1 million. One must hasten to say that there are still about 3,985 students that still need to be paid. And there, that's where your 32 million is actually coming into the picture, 32.6 million. That is not missing. That 32 million did not all of a sudden disappear from somewhere. It is not. But rather what is actually happening here, Chairperson, you have 685 students who have submitted incorrect banking details on the portal. And you have student 1,183 students who have failed the bank verification, meaning that the account is invalid or the ID number does not match the recipient. And those are the things that we are grappling with. And 173 payments were rejected by banks due to the accounts being closed or frozen. And 1,144 have not provided banking detail. This is an area in terms of our engagement that it is the responsibility of students. But we also work with them on our meetings, either being what you call 4x4 or management or an SRC or sending bulk SMSs to ensure that they come and claim what is theirs. So we have those particular campaigns, and I must say that this is not new. We had similar problems last year, but we engage in a number of campaigns with SRC to say we must assist each other here to ensure that the students come and claim their monies. So there continue the status of NESFOS. There is an issue around transport allowance that it has not been paid to non-resident students as the process of private boarding accommodation and housing placement is still going on. This allowance will be backdated and paid with the April allowance upon confirmation of accommodation status of the students. Here we're talking about at the end of April, once that confirmation has come again, 1 April, once that is actually done, we will actually disburse on 1 April 65 million once the confirmation has taken place. Returning students, when you look at this particular aspect, NESFOS has confirmed funding of 6,786 returning students. Of these students, there are still 2,248 students with outstanding matters that are delaying their funding. So it's those particular issues that we are working on a daily basis. That is 287 not on SFAS funded report, 205 new applicants transferring from other tertiary institutions, and we are awaiting their academic results, and 18 have not signed NBA or new bursary agreement, and of course 1,256 students still have NESFOS appeal in process, and 482 students have been linked to other bursaries. And that brings back now to section 7.3 as well as section 7.4 of the MOA. And then the others in blue, one was actually highlighting the fact that you have 880 students who submitted manual applications that are awaiting for decisions from NESFOS. and 1004 need their private boarding arrangements to be processed and verified. Those are the real reasons behind this delay in some cases. Then what is it that CPUT is doing or has done about those students that did not receive their allowances, given the challenge that their banking details seem to be a problem, or banking challenges? It has been a culture at CPUT that we SMS students, weekly bulk SMSs, and we also have email to students weekly, and on bank rejection.
Sorry, VC. Yes. If you can accelerate your.
Okay, I will
speech, so that we have got enough time to engage.
I'll do that, Chairperson. And of course, we also explore the option of dedicated customized card. Number four, we have management and SRC meeting, which is once per term. And of course, we have a subcommittee of MANCOM and SRC, which meet three times a week. We call that 4x4. They actually meet three times and they implement. The other aspect that one can talk about is that what are the future plan interventions? We issued a newsflash this past Saturday, and we are saying that it's going to be a common feature. And of course, we'll be launching a campaign to include and address challenges as listed. The whole question of training and assist students to capture banking details in computer laboratory, incorrect ID numbers, engage bank and student on frozen account and signing on NBA. So there was also a question of misunderstanding on the issue of badge payment. And this particular aspect, we pay our students simultaneously, but the delay sometimes happens from bank in terms of clearance. And because different banks will actually clear different monies in different times. And of course, service providers also send confirmation to students. But further continuous payment as students are also cleared and funded, reports are received from NSFAS. So as reports are actually received from NSFAS, the clearing will actually happen. So you'll have that particular aspect that students say they don't get angry in batches. But unfortunately, their problems are actually different. Their banks are also different. And of course, the whole question of the 500 confirmation, it is CPUT confirmation to student payment that is actually restricted to 500. It's actually that confirmation. It's got nothing to do with simultaneous payment of students. In fact, going forward, we said we will actually give them the payment schedule so that they can actually plan their lives accordingly. Report on protest incidents, Chairperson. Here we had a very good start to 2020. Our registration, when you look at the numbers, everything was running smoothly. And academic opening, staff and student welcome was actually going very well. And of course, we received a set of demands from students, but we constantly engage on this particular demand. And the task team was working right through February. That's why we were not actually affected by some of the items, because we said even the awkward and the most difficult aspect must actually be engaged. And we engage in those particular aspects. But this set of demand, there were 13 in total, before we can even address, because they wanted me to come and take the memorandum. Indeed, I did. I did actually take the memorandum. But before we can even address the issues in the memorandum, when we wake up on the 9th, we found that now, in fact, on the 2nd of March, cars were actually stolen. The banning of L&T full truck. 17 cars were stolen. And this LNT truck, maybe I have to spend some time here. We are told that now this food truck was targeted because it is a winner of a particular tender. But the most strange thing about this particular tender is that it has not even served at management. So as to where do they get that particular information is a mystery. Because in terms of separation of powers and checks and balances, the MANCOM has not dealt with supply chain. But students seem to have information that now this is the winner, and this winner must actually ensure that now he bears the brand. But we don't know, because we have never dealt with that particular matter. It still need to come to management in terms of the supply chain. And of course, we always at an institution make sure that we don't pierce the corporate veil. And of course, on the 13th March, decision to bring research forward was actually taken, particularly closing term 2 in consultation with Council Exco. And of course, we've seen continuous vandalism on campus, and of course, defamatory statement on social media, on media about some of the issues that are totally unfounded. And of course, the disruption of classes that's affecting 34,000 students. I have pictures here, 9 to 13 March. This is a damage to building the 2nd of March 2020. You can see the second building there. That actually relates to our information office or the control room. And of course, you can see the stoning of cars as well. These cars were stoned on the 3rd of March. And of course, you have the flipping of this food truck. The food truck belonged to L&T, which is actually believed to be the winner of a tender. And I must actually say that now, as I've mentioned, that we don't know about that particular aspect. It was flipped, and then of course, there was a second visit that was actually guarded with fire. And of course, there are also other damages to the institution. And then what you are seeing here is the damage of the investigation officers. These investigation officers, it has to deal with destroying evidence that people cannot face consequences, because all the information and data is in this particular aspect of some people who have committed the acts of criminality on campus. It was guarded. That's how evidence or a plan to destroy evidence was made. And of course, this is in front of the construction engineering, which was actually petrol bombed. It failed to take up, but this is the state of affairs in front of that particular building. And of course, this car was also torched that day on the 5th of March. And of course, the prefab classroom, there was an attempt arson on the 9th of March. Chairperson, mitigation, we are continuously engaging with student leadership. Even tomorrow we'll be having a meeting to engage. We are engaging with stakeholders such as labor, such as convocation, such as escort council that I had a meeting with last week, and of course they also engaged with SAP as well as the City of Cape Town. We've engaged with external stakeholders such as Department of Higher Education as well as USAF. So continuous communication with staff and students is actually happening. Engagement with students, I've actually highlighted this 4x4. I've talked about meeting 2 to 3 times a week. I've talked about reaching solution to execute and implement the task of the 4x4. And of course, we have 24/7 task team communication network with the student leadership. So all the demands were responded to within the time frame, that is on Friday, the 6th of March. But we were responding, when we were responding, the building has already been guarded, even though we agreed that we are going to come back
before the close of business the following day. And indeed, notwithstanding the damage on campus, we came back and we also gave the whole community answers backed by policies of the institution as to how we execute our business. Ongoing security measures as well to protect people and property, that is also taking place. And Chairperson, before I conclude my presentation, let me just actually make the following comment to address some of the things that may be problematic in the media. One of them is actually having to deal with the suspension. As an institution, we have handbook. As an institution, we have rules. We are a principle-led organization. And not anybody, including myself, is above the rules and regulations of the institution. So the suspension that sometimes is actually being bandied out there because they're saying since 2015, we look at the numbers, and in May, those particular acts there, they got nothing to do with protests. It's rape cases or gender-based violence cases that you can share. It is actually issues of GBH, where there were fights or some people were actually stabbed in May. So we don't have like a basket of challenges where you can actually say that CPUT expelled a number of students. The student that were expelled that I have the record of here, I'm talking about 10, and those particular students in Maine, they are GBV cases as well as cases that has to do with GBH. And of course, Chair, you also have issues around insufficient residences. This institution, the numbers speak for themselves. My colleague can actually add. We have gone beyond the DHEC norms in terms of the new beds. This year alone, we have more than 3,000 new beds, and we have also procured a number of leased residences, and we have bought the pieces of land as well. Here in Cape Town, we can talk about Jonesfield. You can talk about the swap that has actually happened now in terms of the D6, the East and West, and we were Department of Public Works, we've got actually pieces of land there. Up in Wellington, we have bought plots to ensure that now we are going to build. And the new residences are also coming up. The 200 beds is coming up in Wellington, and there will be a residence coming up in Belleville, and another residence coming up in Wellington. So I'm actually saying for what it's worth, one must actually talk about those particular aspects. And you also have the issue that sometimes we'll say students sleeping in student center. But Chair, one must actually say you have those particular cases. But in many cases, some of these cases, there are cases that students not qualify in any. And that's where I'm talking about now the professional student. I was looking at one of the cases. The student has been here since 2016, but the student has not even master's first year. That's a phenomenon that we are seeing in higher education. You've got some of them who you don't know how they were actually academically unblocked, because those particular students, truly speaking, you've got a student who has registered for year in, year out, but that student is still even not qualifying to be a first-year student. He has actually failed almost everything. Those are the students who are actually blocking the pipeline. And, of course, they'll come out as saying that now they're actually sleeping in what you call student center, etc. But the truth be told, I looked at the numbers yesterday as well, a lot of those particular students they don't even actually qualify to be at university. And, of course, there is also some claim that is actually doing that around corruption. And as well, as well there, we're saying there is whistleblowing. There is actually hotline number at CPUT. We have internal audit. We have external audit. If there are issues, they can actually come up with that. But we are a corruption-free institution. And, of course, we are actually open for any other. And then, of course, there is also an issue that may actually come out in closing, Chairperson, around
intimidation and victimization. As an institution, everything that we are doing it for the benefit of the people of the public and our institution. We have the interest of the student at heart. That's why we are saying even under this particular cloud, we'll continue to engage with utmost good faith. Chairperson, I will actually stop here, and I will be willing to take any question. There should not be any question that is sensitive. I will be more than willing to entertain. And my colleagues are here who can back up everything with fact and figure.
Okay.
Chair, I thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Prof. 1 o'clock, there is a meeting of whips and chairs to relook at the program of Parliament, and so by 1 o'clock I'm going to leave together with the whip. So maybe by then we should have been finished. There is a memorandum that we received last week, Thursday, from the student. Well, I thought that you have been sent this memorandum so that you can also speak to it, but I think the most appropriate thing for now will be to ask that council must respond to the memorandum, because it's sent to the chairperson of council and myself and another member here who's the chair of SCOP, Honorable Hlengwa. So maybe as a way forward, we must ask that the council must respond to all the issues that are here, including the allegations that have been placed. But I'm sure members can raise questions regarding the memorandum, because I suspect that we might require follow-up. I saw the VC was attempting to deal with some of the issues in the memorandum, but I think we require a comprehensive response, VC, by council and as well as management, because there are issues for council, there are issues for management. Okay, let's say then I'd prefer that maybe we take and as far as Honorable Boshoff?
I don't think we have received the memorandum of the students. So
oh, you haven't?
Yeah, so we can't compare it with what...
I thought it was circulated to everybody.
It didn't circulate.
All right. Well, my apology, Honorable Boshoff. I thought it was sent to all the members. Normally, things that comes to me, I ask that all the members must get, unless if they are confidential, because basically it's your information. If you are online, Anele will just email them quickly, and then you can follow through. But as I said, I think the most appropriate thing will be to ask for counsel to respond as well as management, and we can see if there is a need for a follow-up. I thought NSFAS must come before, but maybe let's just take the leadership of the students now that they are on the hot seat. Introduce yourself and the rest of the delegation.
Honourable members, protocol observe. My name is Kulem Bicheni and I'm the Central SRC President of CPUT. And I would like I'm with the Central SRC members together with the delegation from structures. I would like, if the House allows me, to give it to them to introduce themselves as well.
Okay.
My name is Kokoma Lukanye, Deputy President of Central SRC.
I am Nelseka Mehlomakulu, the Central SRC Central Housing Committee.
Morning, everyone. My name is Nwanele Kanyele, the Central SRC Secretary General.
Lutokunele Sasko.
My name is Yanga Skolo from the EFF Student Command.
Greetings, honorable members. My name is Sipho Mokoena, a student in security, the former SRC president invited by the current Central SRC.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Nanga Chotana from SASCO.
Morning, everyone. My name is Neo Mongale from PASMA.
Yanga Tsama, deputy chairperson of PASMA Western Cape.
Okay. All right, thank you. Over to you, President Esso. Now you have an opportunity.